right out here.
That's pretty funny. And still that's me, mine. I always end up giving them advice. Okay, we're going.
You need to call somebody about your daughter.
Welcome back, everyone. It's now 3:45. We are a little bit behind schedule, but I want to first get started on our retail opt-in auction panel. Welcome back our first presenter, Michael Meath, regulatory consultant with Pennsylvania Energy Marketers Coalition. Michael.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I will try to, you've got a number of people here, I'm going to try and keep this at high level. I think thanks goes to the members of the subgroup who have put a great deal of work and time and thought into the concept of a retail opt-in auction. It's not a simple issue. The Pennsylvania Energy Marketers Coalition, who I represent here today, believes that a properly designed and implemented auction would be a strong step towards the further development of a retail electric market in Pennsylvania. At the same time, we recognize that it is an interim step. It's one step towards the final destination, and that is when consumers act on their own behalf to make the decisions that meet their energy needs. I think, although there may be a lot of controversy over this and the coming subjects, we can all believe and agree that what we want is consumers to be comfortable with shopping and feeling knowledgeable enough to make their own choices. While I can't say enough positive about the steps that have been taken in the Commonwealth, the reality is that there are still all kinds of structural impediments to competition. Now, we appreciate that some consumers may be satisfied with default service and are not interested in switching. But we know that many consumers are not acting because they're unclear on how to shop, on what to do. Or as one very smart commission staffer said to me not too many months ago, quote, "Many consumers don't even understand how their utility supply arrangement works, let alone how it might work in a new world." We should capitalize on this lack of understanding, as odd as that may sound, but in a paradigm shift, because we've got an opportunity to educate consumers about how energy works, period. Whatever the reason or reasons holding back shopping, it seems clear that the market could use a kick. And a retail opt-in auction could serve that purpose. I'd like to address just two quick critical questions and then turn it to others. Number one, is the proposal good for customers? And number two, how would it impact the long-term health of the competitive market? And as to the first, if the principles articulated by this subgroup were adhered to, it seems clear that the proposal would be very good for customers. In addition to the potential of a signing bonus, customers could receive a fixed price for a period of time at or below a default price. The opt-in nature of the auction will ensure that consumers who don't want to switch don't have to switch. And how we get from here to there is certainly a devil's playground. Our only caution is that we work to structure this so that it does not become a game stopper for suppliers who are more than willing to take on customers and financially capable of doing so, but are not interested in participating in opt-in auction. And there are some suppliers who would feel that way. Referral programs and other market enhancements should run concurrent so that the rich marketplace can be achieved. The second question has to do with, is it best for the long-term health of the market? And although there might be some risk that providing all these incentives kind of sets us up, if you will, we believe that there are three considerations that would support the benefit of an opt-in auction in the long run. Number one, we think, view it as a kickstart, nothing more. After the initial term, whether a customer stays with their now new EGS, chooses to return to a default service, or shops to find another supplier, the auction would be have been successful in getting the customer comfortable with the movement. Second, an opt-in auction, along with other market enhancements, will give EGSs themselves an incentive to get out there and offer competitive offers. Going back to my earlier example, if someone chose not to even participate in the auction, they might choose that period of time to more aggressively market their products and services that are different and that wouldn't fit into the auction. And third, and finally, the auction can't be an end to itself. So whether it includes allowing default services to be provided by EGSs, putting a premium on default service to represent the value that some customers place on it. I should say that again because that's a real paradigm shift in thinking. Putting a premium on default service to represent the value that some customers might place on it. Or other enhancements, as have been discussed earlier, the strategy has to be more than an opt-in to get us to the end state. And I'll stop there and defer to others for more in-depth comments.
Thank you. I'd like to recognize Tony Banks, Vice President of Competitive Market Policy for First Energy Solutions. Tony.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I'll point to our fundamentals that we believe in the marketplace, which is to give the customer what they want. If there's going to be an opt-in auction, we think that a properly structured auction process can work very well. One of the fundamentals is, as with the referral program, which I didn't mention earlier, we think that the opt-in auction needs to be well coordinated with the upcoming default service procurements that utilities are going to undertake. So it's our view that all of these programs should start power flow June 1st of 2013 because we think it allows for the proper amount of consumer education, because even though we're all involved in this industry every day, my view would be that most people just aren't that interested. So the fewer times we can go to customers with quality information, the better we are. So I think that we should think holistically about the consumer education program and integrate the process so that everything rolls out, customers really understand, suppliers understand, and we think that you'd have a better functioning marketplace. But as it relates to the structure itself, we think, first of all, fixed price product is the right product, or a percent off. Some folks have expressed concern that the product could end up costing a customer more than default service, so we think percent off could be a solution to that. But again, we could be comfortable with a two-year fixed price product, a one-year fixed price product, but we do believe it should be fixed price. The other part of the auction structure that's been proposed is around this idea of an incentive payment. And we've heard survey results that indicate customers are attracted to incentives. But we've done our own real work in the real world, where we've offered customers the option of no incentive payment, and we've ratcheted the incentive payments up to a number, and some of this is competitively sensitive, so we can't describe it all, but we also then ratcheted the price up that would equate to the increase in the incentive payment. And the largest percent of customers selected no incentive payment in exchange for the lowest price. So that tells us a lot about the incentive payment, but we think there could be some risk that that might not be the right product to attract the customers. And in the subgroup, I kind of jokingly threw out the idea we might be better off with a drawing of something significant, but the more I thought about it, I mean, you might want to throw in an electric vehicle and energy efficient appliances, and that might actually attract more customers to take part in this process than an incentive payment. So I throw that out for consideration. The other point of our view of what an opt-in auction should look like, there was a lot of discussion about load caps. And I know that one of the objectives is to get as many suppliers to participate as possible, and we think that's a very valid objective. We think, however, though, that for suppliers to participate, they should, again, earn the right to be in the process. So to the extent that you have four suppliers offering a variety of products and services in the marketplace, we think that is a superior outcome than having a limit on any one supplier being able to secure a certain number of customers. And as I looked at PA PowerSwitch across all of the EDCs in the state, All but one of the significant EDCs have at least six suppliers offering long-term fixed-price products. So, again, all of those suppliers would be equipped and capable of participating in an opt-in auction. So we think that that would be a superior outcome than having load caps, because when you have load caps, the customer will not get the lowest possible price. As it relates to once a customer is signed up with an EGS, we think that the EGS that has that customer and any other EGS should be able to sign that customer up. There shouldn't be any limits on the customer's ability to shop with someone else or even go into a new product with the existing EGS. We believe that to the extent you're going to have an incentive payment, there should be a period of time where the customer doesn't get paid that amount until later in the process. There was some discussion about financial assurance, and in our view, we don't believe an EGS should have to post any additional financial insurance except for the amount of any incentive that they're obligated to pay. And then that financial assurance for the incentive should go away once the incentive is paid, so that the EGS is only obligated to perform in a way that it's already obligated. And again, I would emphasize our view of the need to integrate all of these processes and focus on the consumer education up front. Make sure that everyone understands when default service is going to start, so that you establish the PTC before the opt-in auction. But then the opt-in auction structure should be known before the default service process, so suppliers aren't incented to add a lot of risk premium to their default service bid. So again, we think it's critically important to look at this holistically and roll out these programs in a way that consumer education, the right amount of consumer education, can take place up front. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I'd like to recognize Paul Hibbard, Vice President of the Analyst Group.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, and Commissioners. I appreciate the opportunity to be on this panel. In addition to being Vice President at Analysis Group, you should probably also know that up until about a year ago, I was the Chairman of the Massachusetts Commission. So I have been in your shoes, or shoes like them. And it's with that I am watching with great interest the groundbreaking steps that you all are taking here in Pennsylvania to increase retail access for smaller customers, residential and smaller commercial customers. I think actually it will not only benefit the residents of Pennsylvania, but it hopefully, given how far it seems you're willing to go, will be a model for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and other states that are struggling with the problems associated with weak migration of residential and small commercial customers. In my state, as seems to be the case here in Pennsylvania, or at least some of the service territories, it was impossible not to notice the challenges associated with migration of smaller customers. It's been frustratingly low, and that's despite very sincere efforts on the parts of all the stakeholders in Massachusetts to move things along. When we enacted restructuring in Massachusetts, I know for certain the legislature did not intend the benefits of robust retail competition to flow only to large industrial customers and large commercial customers. And in this proceeding and at this time, I feel that you are uniquely positioned to create fundamentally new conditions for a transition to a truly competitive market for all customers within the Commonwealth. And that's why I think this opt-in auction structure under discussion is so extremely important. It really can be a game changer, one that will deliver immediate benefits for residential and small commercial customers and do so without transferring any additional risk to those customers, and could spur a qualitative change in the level of migration and the strength of retail competition in the Commonwealth. It can do it because, as currently being discussed, it's a series of steps that can build momentum through a pilot auction at the end of 2012 to a full-scale auction in 2013, creating the conditions for the longer-term vision that you are thinking about in the context of Phase 2 of the retail markets investigation. I'm here with my colleague, Andrew Parise, who is managing principal in our Boston office and has designed, implemented, and monitored auctions in the electric industry. Andy will provide some comments on the auction structure that's been proposed by DIRECT in this proceeding and under discussion in the retail opt-in auction subgroup. But what I would like to do first is just provide one quick comment on the perspective on auction timing and its link to the default service procurements. As a commission in this investigation, I think you are very deftly balancing two overriding objectives. The first, obviously, is to push forward with the Commonwealth's commitment to harnessing competition as a mechanism for providing full retail access and delivering lowest cost energy supply to ratepayers over the long run. But the second is the need to be sure that in doing so, you're honoring contractual commitments and you're protecting, you continue to protect customers that for whatever reason are not ready or have not otherwise chosen competitive retail suppliers. Neither of these goals need to be compromised in this context in consideration about opt-in auctions, I think. When we have looked fairly carefully at the structure of the default service procurement plans in place and how they line up against potential for auction timelines for both a pilot auction and for a full-scale auction in 2013, the details are in the presentation that we've provided, but what becomes clear upon review of these plans is that there really is no impediment to a pilot auction and a substantial pilot auction in the range of 10 to 20% at the end of 2012 associated with what's laid out in the plans. And little in the way of opening up enrollment in a full-scale auction in 2013 to essentially all default service customers. The takeaway from this for us is that provided the Commission very clearly in its decision in this case addresses expectations for default service procurements on a going forward basis as described in Direct's comments, you have a great deal of flexibility at this point in time to pursue an aggressive agenda to promote retail competition while at the same time honoring contractual commitments and protecting the retail customers that stay on default service. So with that introduction, again, I want to thank you for the opportunity, and I'll pass it over to Andy.
Now I'd like to introduce Andrew Parse, Managing Principal of the Analysis Group.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Commission as well. My name is Andrew Parse. I'm a Managing Principal with Analysis Group and also representing Direct Energy in this hearing. I was involved very early in the design of the clock auction format for use in standard offer service auctions in Massachusetts and have also served as one of the auction monitors on behalf of the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities in its first basic generation service auction. I'd like to cover a few key Direct Energy recommendations that relate to the specifics of the retail opt-in auction approach. I have participated in several of the subgroup conference calls and believe that these recommendations are consistent with the high-level principles that were identified by the subgroup in late September, and these discussions have indeed informed the Direct Energy recommendations that I'm going to be outlining. While there do remain different views on specific parameters, of course, the subgroup, I believe, has made substantial progress in developing the core elements of the auction approach based on these principles. So there are a few key areas related to the auction approach being recommended by Direct Energy that I'd like to touch on briefly given the time constraints. These points are also covered in the presentation materials that were distributed. First, the eligible participants in the auction would be residential and small commercial customers who are on default service at the beginning of the enrollment period. These are the only customers to whom the program would be marketed, which should mitigate any potential impact on the existing competitive market. Under the program, there would be a bonus payment to customers who opt into the program, which would be set by the PUC administratively. It would be statewide, one bonus payment for residential customers and one for small commercial. And it would be announced to customers prior to the enrollment period. We're recommending a bonus payment in the range of $100 to $150 for residential customers and $150 to $200 for small commercial customers, which is based largely on the focus group research presented previously. This research indicated that the signing bonus is a key element required to motivate customer participation. Another point here is that we'd suggest that there's flexibility on the part of the PUC in a number of the auction parameters, basically holding off until closer to the enrollment period before specifying those so that market conditions, market research, or other information that comes into play can be taken into account in setting those parameters. The auction itself would be used to set the fixed price per kWh for all customers who opt into the period for a program of a period of a year. Eligible customers would be informed prior to the enrollment period that the fixed price would be lower than the known default service rate at the beginning of the program period, which would be June 1st, 2013, for the full-scale auction. The fixed price would not change over the program period, and it would be guaranteed to be lower than the default service rate for 6 months, assuming that the EDC has moved to biannual default service rate adjustments as recommended by the PUC. After 3 months, the bonus payment is made to the customer by the EGS, and the customer is free to choose an alternative supplier or return to default service without losing the bonus payment or the savings that have accrued. In terms of the auction mechanism, I can keep this brief. We're recommending a descending clock auction approach for setting the fixed price per kWh. This auction approach is relatively simple. It's been used successfully in many different service areas, most notably the New Jersey Basic Generation Service auctions. It is expected to achieve the lowest prices under robust competition relative to sealed bid one-time auction approaches due to the transparency with respect to the total offers that are being bid from round to round. With regard to the scope and the scale of the pilot auctions, Direct Energy is recommending a limit of 10% to 20% of customers on default service at the beginning of the enrollment period. This percent would vary by EDC based on the level of retail shopping and the absolute number of default service customers at the EDC. Direct Energy recommends that there'll be no limit on the default service customer participation at the full-scale option auction. As Paul noted, we believe it's extremely important for as many customers as possible to experience the benefits of retail choice, consistent with the long-term goals of the RMI initiative as articulated by the PUC, and current default service plans are not likely to be a barrier based on the analysis that Paul referred to earlier. Direct Energy is also recommending limits on the winnings of any one supplier in the auction, ranging from 25% to 50% of opt-in customers. Such load caps, as they're termed elsewhere, have been a common feature of other electricity auctions to ensure robust price competition, diversity of suppliers, and to address market power. These are just a few of the many details that would need to be specified in the final auction rules and approved by the PUC prior to implementing the retail opt-in auctions. I'm confident that if designed, implemented, and marketed appropriately, this retail opt-in auction approach could lead to significant benefits for the consumers in Pennsylvania. And that concludes my comments.
Thank you. Just a reminder, I'd ask that everybody adhere to the time here. It's getting late in the day and don't want to cut into the panel's opportunity to have a good exchange with us. But Tanya, I'm going to turn it over to you for your presentation.
Thank you. Our panel will each take 3 minutes for their remarks, Judge Barnes.
3 minutes is fine.
Thank you. The OCA has supported the concept of a retail opt-in auction for residential customers as a one-time event to jumpstart competition, particularly in areas where switching has been light. But key to that support is the development of a program that complies with the Public Utility Code, does not harm default service, does not harm the competitive market, and does not harm customers that volunteer to participate in this commission-sponsored program. The OCA remains optimistic that a retail opt-in auction could be designed to achieve these requirements and continues to work with the subgroup on possible designs. The program will need to be reasonable in size, with a limit on participation that is known in advance of any default service procurements. Mr. Robinson of Citizens Power has presented a specific proposal in this regard, and he will discuss that on this panel. The OCA believes that this proposal should be given serious consideration in the subgroup. The timing of the procurement must also be properly coordinated with default service plans and procurements to ensure that the EDC's ability to secure reasonably priced default service is not harmed by the program. The program needs to provide customers with identifiable, tangible benefits. Customers should also not be subjected to cancellation fees, unclear terms and conditions, or short-term teaser rates as part of this program. To be successful, the OCA also believes that customers should be made fully aware of the terms, rates, and conditions of the program before they opt in to anything. In its November 3rd comments, the OCA has provided a more extensive discussion of these programs and the necessary elements of such programs if they move forward. The OCA also refers the Commission to the high-level principles that have been developed through the subgroup process. These principles provide important guidance in the consideration of any specific program design. While optimistic that a design could be achieved within the parameters discussed here and in the OCA's comments, the OCA urges caution in the consideration of how such a program would be coordinated, for example, with a commission referral program, as well as individual suppliers' ongoing marketing efforts. Such a program may also favor one type of market supplier over another. And if not properly sized and coordinated, a retail opt-in auction runs the risk of harming both default service and the competitive markets. As far as the OCA is aware, a commission-sponsored retail opt-in auction for electric customers has not been tried anywhere else in the United States. While such a program holds the potential for benefits to consumers, care must be taken in the design of such programs to address the risks that such program could introduce. The OCA looks forward to continuing to work in the subgroup on these proposals. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman.
Mr. Geller, please speak into the microphone.
Yes.
Thank you.
I thank you. Many of the same concerns which have been previously expressed regarding the referral service would apply, of course, to the opt-in auction regarding CAP customers. CAP customers certainly need to have many of the issues addressed prior to the opt-in auction, and they should not be buying a product which is greater than the price to compare. They should not be subject to penalties or cancellation fees, nor be precluded from returning to the EDC as a CAP customer with the same rights and benefits which were available prior to shopping. The unanswered questions that we've discussed about the ability of low-income customers enrolled in a number of the EDCs to shop and the economic effects of doing so, as well as the internal complexities, will need to be resolved prior to the development of an opt-in auction process and the inclusion of CAP customers. If these CAP-specific issues can be resolved and clearly articulated to potential CAP customers, then consideration of a pilot opt-in auction as part of an EDC's default service plan could be developed. However, clear and detailed consumer protection policies must be established by the Commission prior to the implementation of any opt-in auction process, and this is not yet accomplished. As OCA has said, we support the comments that there has to be very clear Commission scrutiny of the details of the proposal which comes before it, and at a minimum requires thoughtful consideration of the design, size, implementation steps, and associated consumer protections. In addition to the low-income CAP customer concerns, a number of other significant issues have not been resolved, all of which impact low-income households. For example, what happens to customers who participate in the auction after the initial fixed rate period? Pope submits that these customers should, absent an affirmative choice to remain with the EGS at the conclusion of the auction period, be returned to default service. More than 50% of low-income customers at 150% of poverty or below do not participate in CAPS. In a well-designed auction with appropriate consumer protections, this group may find cost benefits from a fixed price below the price to compare. However, the economic fragility of these households provide them no margin to absorb the increased rates after the initial period has ended, and the potential for increased rates becomes a reality. The Choice Act clearly intends that these low-income non-CAP customers also receive commission protection from the possible vagaries of a competitive market. They should not be subject to penalties or fees for choosing to return. In addition, should these customers at any time after choosing a competitive option be subject to financial difficulties and become payment troubled, they should be provided immediate referral consideration and enrollment for each of the available universal service programs, including CAP and LIRP. Such a protective stance articulated by the Commission would enable the low-income consumer to obtain the benefits of shopping while retaining the protections envisioned for low-income by the Choice Act. This referral and enrollment process should be seamless, easily navigated by the consumer, and should be a required component of any opt-in auction design. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to recognize again Jane Riesmeister, Senior Legislative Representative for the AARP. Jane?
Thank you very much. And in the interest of time, I'll be very brief. And
sorry,
say
Ms. Bryce.
That,
one moment. Thank you.
Thank you. And in the interest of time, I'll be very brief and say that AARP agrees with the comments provided by OCA and PULP, and also emphasize that we share the concern that was addressed in several comments that any opt-in auction should not negatively impact the default service that procurements that will be serving the customers who remain on default service, regardless of how successful any of the policies or proposals that are being discussed here today are in inducing customers to switch. A significant number will remain on default service, and they should not be disadvantaged by any impact that the opt-in auction may have on the default service plans. Thank you.
Thank you. And now I'd like to recognize Ted Robinson, who's a staff attorney with Citizens Power. Ted, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to thank the Commission for the opportunity to participate in today's bank hearing regarding retail markets. Our comments today will focus upon the potential for a retail opt-in auction to introduce increased risk into the EDC's default service auctions. We agree that the opt-in auction should not negatively impact these auctions. Although Citizen Power does not believe that residential retail markets will develop as originally envisioned, we do support initiatives to facilitate the competitive marketplace, such as a retail opt-in auction. However, such auctions have the potential to increase the risk premiums faced by participants in power auctions to serve default customers. Each of the participants in these auctions faces the risk that the load they anticipate serving is significantly different than the actual load they end up serving because of unexpected numbers of customers switching from default service to an alternative supplier. The risk that a potential default service supplier's estimate of the number of switching customers is incorrect increases substantially if they do not know the number of customers participating in the opt-in auction in advance of the default auction. Similarly, the inability to estimate shopping numbers makes it difficult to know the likely exposure faced should customers switch back to default service during periods of unexpectedly high energy cost. Both of these increases in risk should increase the default rate and may limit the amount of participation in the default service auction. Since the majority of residential customers are currently on default service, the amount of uncertainty should be reduced as much as possible. Citizen Power believes that limiting participation in the opt-in auction to 10% of customers on default service of each customer class in each EDC territory would minimize any uncertainty regarding likely switching numbers during the default service plan time period, while allowing for significant participation in the opt-in auction process. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our final presenter on the retail opt-in auction panel is Mr. Doug Krall, Manager of Regulatory Strategy for PPL Electric Utilities. Doug?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, and good afternoon, Commissioners. PPL Electric Utilities Corporation, and I'll use the shorthand PPL Electric that most of you are familiar with, has been an active supporter of both wholesale and retail electricity competition and the development of customer choice within the Commonwealth. Today, over three-quarters of the kilowatt hours, that's over 75% of the kilowatt hours consumed in our service territory, are provided by competitive electric generation suppliers. The customers consuming these kilowatt hours represent over 40% of PPL Electric's customers and include almost, we're getting darn close, to 500,000 residential customers who are taking EGS supply. These results reflect the contributions and hard work since 2009 of not only PPL Electric, but also of the PUC and of the EGSs in the PPL service territory to patiently and relentlessly increase awareness of shopping as one of several tools available for customers to control their electricity costs. Sometimes it feels like one customer at a time. I'm looking at Commissioner Cawley, who's done our TV ads, but it is working. The company has been a supporter of, an active participant in the retail markets investigation, and an active participant on every one of the subgroups, including the opt-in subgroup, that is open to our participation. On behalf of PPL Electric, I want to thank the Commission for the opportunity to testify at this hearing. So the subject of the panel is the use of retail opt-in auctions to encourage non-shopping customers to leave EDC-provided default service. The Commission's tentative order, entered October 14th, recommended that EDCs consider incorporating a number of features within their next default service plans, including an opt-in auction. PPL Electric has begun the process of considering all of the Commission's recommendations. At this early stage of those considerations, the company believes that an opt-in auction has the potential to encourage customers who might otherwise not consider shopping to switch from EDC-provided default service. However, and you've heard this in regards to others of the programs discussed today, while the approach seems simple, it is actually more complex than one might think, and depending on its ultimate design and the unique features that may exist in individual EDC service territories, could have unintended negative consequences. PPL Electric offers here the following early insights arising from its considerations of retail opt-in auctions. First, opt-in as opposed to opt-out is the better approach. Given that the objective of a program is to overcome customer inertia, forcing customers to opt out to avoid participation is likely to actually increase resistance and probably be counterproductive. Retail opt-in auctions should not be allowed to impact existing default service supply contracts. PPL Electric believes that the tentative order is correct in recommending that auctions be considered for inclusion in EDC's next default service plans because the existence of such programs can dramatically alter customer migration, and wholesale suppliers of full requirements products need to have an opportunity to factor that into the prices that they bid. Because retail auctions were not an element of existing default service plans, it follows, therefore, that existing default service supply contracts for full requirement service were entered into without knowledge of specific retail auction programs. The introduction of such programs at this late date in those plans could affect the parties to those contracts and ultimately alter the default service that's available to customers under existing plans. Next, retail opt-in auctions need to be carefully designed so as not to be disruptive to existing shopping patterns or result in only temporary increases in the shopping population. In that regard, the retail auction structure that is being discussed is fundamentally different from the core premise of retail competition, which is customers making individual choices to purchase those products that best meet their individual needs. A large portion of PPL Electric's customer base, and I gave you some figures earlier, has embraced that core premise, and the company believes that that is the best way for choice to grow and ultimately for choice to achieve the objectives that were set out in the Customer Choice and Competition Act. The company is concerned that this new approach, especially if perceived to discriminate against shoppers and or if structured so that customers perceive it to be a bait and switch program, will undermine years of consumer education and potentially have a chilling effect on shopping in our service territory. Also, default service in the PPL Electric service territory will continue for quite a while as a result of the contracts made under existing plans to include block supply contracts entered into under its existing default service plan. Those contracts provide fixed amounts of energy at a relatively low cost, with the result that as shopping increases and as customers migrate away, the price of default service will drop from what it would otherwise have been. This could result in opt-in participants actually returning to default service immediately after they qualify for any uprun inducement that may be part of the program. Retail opt-in auctions may result in fewer choices being available to customers. The lowest competitive residential offer currently in the PPL service territory is only 0.42 cents per kilowatt hour below the company's current price to compare. Proposals that have been discussed within this subgroup include inducements and discounts that to us seem to far exceed the savings that an average customer might otherwise expect to receive during a single year. This raises a number of concerns, but among them is the concern that only those EGSs with the financial ability to, in effect, buy market share will be able to participate in the retail opt-in auction. Ultimately, only those EGSs would remain in the market, resulting in fewer choices for customers, a primary focus on price competition, and a loss of variety related to other non-price attributes. Finally, retail opt-in auctions should neither benefit nor harm non-participants. The retail auction structure being discussed within the subgroup provides benefits to participating customers through the inducements and discounts, without which there would be no participation and no success in the program, and to participating EGSs who acquire customers without marketing costs. Non-participating customers should not benefit or be harmed, especially if they are not eligible to participate. Non-participating EGSs should not benefit or be harmed. These circumstances lead to the conclusion that the costs of a retail opt-in auction should be borne by the EGSs that participate in and are the primary beneficiaries of such an auction. Again, on behalf of PPL Electric, I thank you for the opportunity to express the insights the company has been able to develop thus far as it continues to consider the role of a retail auction and the role it may play in its next default service plan. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have at the appropriate time.
Thank you. I'd like to recognize Commissioner Whitmer for questions.
I don't have any questions for this panel, but thank you.
Commissioner Gardner.
We're on a roll here. I don't have any questions for the panel either, and I really appreciate the comments and inputs, and I think that we're going to have a very interesting next 4 to 6 months as we try to work through this issue.
Vice Chairman Coleman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you again to our panelists. I don't have questions at this time.
Commissioner Cawley, fire away.
No, I don't have any questions either, except to observe this is just another possible way of was the term jump-starting competition? This is just another possible way that we may introduce more customers to shopping, and we've got to get it right. So my thanks to the panel as well.
Thank you. And I simply would add that, we look at, if we want to call it an opt-in auction or a bonus switching program, I'm honing in on my consumer advocates here. So if we conduct a voluntary opt-in aggregation where customers could agree to be part of an aggregation pool in return for receiving a signing bonus anywhere from $100 to $500, you wouldn't object to that so long as there's proper safeguards in place. That's what I think I heard you all say.
I think that's a fair summary. You know, what those safeguards are and what that actual price might be and whether or not customers know what they're opting into, you know, are all very important considerations. But in particular, the opt-in retail aggregation model is the model that we think has a lot of promise.
Okay. Anybody else want to add?
And the issues regarding the current default customers, I think, are part of our list of customer protections.
Okay. The one last question I have, the whole issue of the PTC came up, the price to compare issue, and I want to recognize my good colleague, Mr. Commissioner Cawley. He's had concerns, we've all had concerns, about the 8-point font and where it shows up on the bill. And if I would just, Doug, on your side, Dick Webster and others, is there a strategy within the company to get more aggressive in showing that PTC to customers rather than bury it in line item number 3 on the bill?
So we just went through a bill design. We were the last company to not have it on the bill, and it is now on the bill. If you want it bigger, we'll look and see where we can put it to make it bigger. But, I mean, but I think the fundamental issue is this all has to be considered together. So, for example, in our service territory, the PTC is affected by migration. If I advertise the PTC in big letters, I may be creating buyer's remorse for people who join an opt-in auction. The PTC becomes an element of consumer ed. How do we educate around the consumer ed? And is it savings we want to emphasize or not? So it's on the bill, and I would hope that as a part of this discussion and a comprehensive answer that comes out of the retail markets investigation, we as Commissioner Cawley has said, we get it right, that we give it its right position for consumer ed, for visibility, for shopping ease, all of those things.
I would thank you for finally putting it on PPL's bill. I wish you would make the font a little bigger or put it in red. whatever you do, it needs to be a little more prominent.
Noted.
Okay. Thank you very much, panelists. And if I could now ask the default service plans panel beyond 2013, we have a former colleague and president of the Energy Association of Pennsylvania, Terry Fitzpatrick, Chuck Fulham, PA Director of Rates and Regulatory Affairs for First Energy Companies. Also joining us, Richie Hudson, PA Chair of RESA, Michael Meath, Corey Bozowski, Vice President and General Manager of U.S. North from Direct Energy, Andrea Williams with NRG, and Tom Butler, Director of Retail Business Development for Dominion Retail. And on our consumer panel, recognize Sonny Papowski and Jane Briesmeister, Senior Legislative Rep from the AARP. If we could get the panel assembled.